This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In 2015, the state legislature passed Act 46, a law that deals with school district consolidation. Basically, the idea is to reduce the number of school districts in Vermont, which for a time exceeded the number of towns we have. Under the consolidation agreements, four, five, or six schools will be governed by a single school board. These districts are being proposed and voted on by towns around the state. And the state has offered a carrot, tax breaks, and assistance to towns that work towards consolidation. But the Agency of Education has the right to create proposals that would realign and force mergers in some towns if they don't move forward with their own plans by July of 2019. Today on the show, we're going to talk about the law and get some clarity on what it does and doesn't require. We're also going to hear from a bunch of towns that are working through this process and are at various stages in it. I'm joined this hour by Howard Weiss-Tisman, VPR's Southern Vermont reporter, who's done a lot of reporting on Act 46. Hi, Howard. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Jane.
So can you just basically go a little deeper in what the aim of this act is, what the aim of Act 46 is doing?
Yeah, well, like you said, the whole idea was to try to consolidate the school districts. And the law was written in recognition of the declining enrollment that was happening across Vermont. In the mid-1990s, we had about 105,000 students. Today, we have about 87,000. So as small schools were facing fewer students, they're forced to cut music and foreign language and art. And Act 46 supporters say that when these smaller schools are part of larger districts, that they'd have more options and they'd be able to maybe afford that music teacher and that foreign language. And the big word that Act 46 supporters use a lot is equity. And what they're trying to do is to make education more equitable across the state, small schools and large schools. So that's the general idea.
You know, you hear a lot of not code words exactly, but one of the words that comes up often in talking about Act 46 is efficiencies. School districts are supposed to create efficiencies. And, you know, is that both in educational quality and in money? This is not a law, as we've heard from Rebecca Holcomb, the Secretary of Education in the past, that is designed specifically to cut costs for school districts. But is the idea here that there will be efficiencies both in terms of how that equity basically filters down, but also in finances?
Yeah, when the law was debated in the legislature, there was a lot of talk, and there continues to be a lot of talk about property taxes. But the State Board of Education has found that Act 46 really is not about money. Some of the districts that are a little bit farther along and that are starting to write budgets, they're saving a couple hundred thousand dollars here and there, but it's really not really about money. And they're finding that out. And I think more and more the supporters are even coming to terms with that and starting to talk about that. So I don't really think it is really about the finances so much.
Today, we're looking at how Act 46 works. We want to get a better idea of how it's actually going for towns and districts that are in various phases of working on merger plans. Listeners, please let us know what your town's doing and what you're thinking. Are you a parent? Are you a member of a school board? Has your town started merging with other towns and other districts? Or are you perhaps pushing back against the idea? 1-800-639-2211 is the number to call, or you can post a comment on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Howard, before we get to some of the districts that are working on this, can you give us an overview of what's already happening around the state? I mean, there are a lot of different plans and a lot of different stages, but what's the landscape?
Yeah, so very quickly. So the law was written in three phases, and the first phase ended on July 1st of this year. And during that time, supporters weren't really expecting a lot of activity, and they were very surprised that when the first phase ended on July 1st, there were 12 new merged districts and 50 towns had approved their plans. So there was a lot of action. The system was set up kind of by a tiered property tax relief. So districts that were able to get their plans in place before July 1st of last year got an extra tax break. Now we're in the second phase now. That goes through July 1st of this year. And the State Board of Education,
this year being 2017.
That's right. Yeah. And the State Board of Education is continuing to see a lot of work. They're actually planning an extra meeting in January because a lot of districts are scrambling to get their votes done in time for town meeting, though they have until July 1st. Very quickly, during the final phase, it goes through July 1st of 2019. A few other important dates is that districts that have had unsuccessful votes or districts that just failed to become parts of new districts, they have to submit a plan to the education secretary before November 30th, 2017, which is coming right up. The Secretary of Education then will submit a proposed plan before June 1st, 2018. And that's where a lot of controversy and a lot of misunderstanding, though I got to say I don't quite understand it either, is what the Secretary can and can't force at that point. And then the State Board of Education is going to supposedly wrap the whole thing up before November 30th, 2018. Now, that's just about 2 years away. And it seems like that's not a long time when all this work has to be done.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the dates get very confusing very quickly and so many of them. And one that I just want to have you clarify, you said hoping to wrap this up by towards the end of 2018. But my understanding from the state is that those forced mergers can't start happening until after 2019.
Yeah, well, 2019 is when the state board kind of approves the secretary's plan. So the secretary is going to look at all the mergers that happened. He or she will propose what to do with those districts that didn't become part. And then the state board approves the full plan at the end of 2019.
Got it. And the question that you have, the part that's confusing for you, is what the Agency of Education and then the State Board can actually force. Like, exactly what can they force towns that have not made their own voluntary merger proposals to do?
Yeah, it's been a little unclear. I printed out exactly what it says. It says the secretary creates a proposal for governance changes to the extent necessary, possible, and practicable. So some people have read that the secretary can force it. Governor Shumlin was speaking to Bob Kinzel, and he backed away from it a little bit. Now, of course, he's not going to be around when this all comes down. So it's unclear about how much power the Secretary of the State Board will have in forcing those outliers, if you will, that haven't merged by the end of 2018.
Not surprisingly, we're getting a lot of comments from listeners who are thinking about this in their communities. Some people like the mergers, some people don't. H. Vermont says the Vermont Constitution states, quote, a competent number of schools ought to be maintained in each town unless the General Assembly permits other provisions for the convenient instruction of youth. And this listener says, note that it says each town, not each county or each region or Vermont. The founders of our state linked schools and towns for good reason. Maintaining a school has traditionally been at the heart of our towns. Our town-based system of educational governance has given us one of the best performing school systems in the USA, a system where parents have a real say in the operation of the school their child attends. I hope Vermonters in Vermont continue to reject these Act 46 consolidation proposals when they come up for town meetings in March. Well, let's talk to some communities that are going through this and see from their experience what it's been like. One community that's actually been working on this for several years now is the Essex-Westford School District. Martha Heath is chair of the district. She also used to be a state rep and served as House Appropriations Chair, and she's with us now. Hi, Martha. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
I understand that you actually got started before Act 46 was even passed. So why did your communities think that a district merger would be helpful?
So we started out as what was called the Bread Study Committee in the spring of 2015. And we decided to move forward because we felt the time was right. We had studied this idea previously about 10 years before. We were interested in the incentives the communities of Essex Town and Essex Junction were working together on some municipal projects, so we thought the time might be right for them. And in the town of Westford, where I live, we were experiencing pretty dramatic declines in enrollment, which was driving up our tax rate and causing us to start to dismantle some important programs in our school. And we could see that that trajectory was going to continue if we didn't change something. So the passage of Act 46 just helped in that it improved the incentives that were available, but we had started down the path, as I said, before the passage of the Act.
And where are you now?
Well, we approved formation of the district in November of 2015. Takes a while for the district to get certified and actually formed, but last February we had our first board retreat, and with the exception of July, we've been meeting twice a month. We are working hard to our consolidation is a little different than many in that we had two superintendents, one in Essex Town and one for Chittenden Central Supervisory Union. So I think it's a bit more work when you're combining two different ways of doing things at the central office level. But we're developing policies. We're about to embark on budget work. We're in the process of hiring a superintendent because our two superintendents announced that they would not be candidates for the job. And we're talking a lot about, or we're beginning to talk about how to improve opportunities for our students.
That's Martha Heath, chair of the Essex-Westford School District. Martha, thank you for telling us where you stand in this whole merger process. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jane.
And let's go to John, who's calling in from Stratford. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Hey, I appreciate the program. Couple problems here. One is, it's interesting that now Act 46 was sold on the basis of dealing with property taxes, at least in part, and now that seems to be not coming true. The second thing was equity. It was supposed to provide equity. What actually has happened is made it more inequitable.
Why do you say that, John? Why do you think it's more inequitable?
Well, you have districts that are geographically able to consolidate very easily, being given incentives paid for by districts that can't. And this is primarily rural schools that just aren't set up to easily consolidate, whereas schools that are can easily do it and get incentives paid for by the education fund and, in effect, by others, towns that cannot do that.
John, thanks for your point. Howard West Tisman, I want to come back to you on what John is saying. You know, my understanding was that this was not necessarily sold on providing tax relief. This was sold as a way to increase equity. So on that score, you know, John and I agree on what we were hearing. But what do you think about this idea that towns that are not in a position, an easy position to merge, may be at a disadvantage and may be essentially subsidizing these communities that are finding mergers more easy?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough argument. What I think supporters would say is that you're going to have to let this play out. Remember, we're just about halfway through this whole process. And so I don't know if it's necessarily fair to say that the other districts are at a disadvantage, because that's part of this whole process is that they understood that that first phase was going to be easy. It was usually among supervisor unions that were used to working with each other, and I think it's a little too soon to say that the education is not going to become equitable throughout it, because we're going to have to see how this plays out and what happens to those districts in the end.
We're talking with Howard Weiss Tisman, Vermont's VPR's Southern Vermont reporter, and we're looking at Act 46 today. Coming up, we're going to hear from a lot more communities who are dealing with this this idea of merging and figuring out ways to do it or not do it. We're going to hear from somebody who thinks the law is not a good one or the act is not a good one, and the resulting ways that towns are being forced to think about this is not good for everybody. If you have a perception of this act and you want to share your thoughts with us, our number is 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking with Howard Weiss-Tisman, VPR's Southern Vermont reporter, about how schools and towns around the state are going through district consolidation plans under Act 46. Howard has been clarifying some of the rules in the law and giving us an overview, and we're hearing from school districts that are already working on how to merge. Flor Diaz-Smith is chair of the Washington Central Supervisory Union Act 46 Committee and is on the line with us now. Hi, Flor. Nice to talk with you.
Hey, good afternoon, Jane. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So I understand your district includes Berlin, Calais, Worcester, East Montpelier, and Middlesex. Where are you in the process? I hear you've gotten a little bit stalled.
We are exactly there. We are in where we're trying to call a restart. So we are setting up to come back as a committee in January and hit the ground running with a facilitator and try to come up with a plan that completely represents all our communities and that we're able to stand behind and bring over for a vote or pass it on to the full board for to look at an alternative.
What would you say is the big sticking point or the biggest challenge in figuring out the right way to merge?
I think for us, there's actually three things. One, that we set up a charge through our full board that gave us the freedom to look at an alternative and a preferred model. And then the 706B pretty much just lets you look at the Act 46 as a union. So what that created for us to have to, you know, not be able to talk about all the issues and the governance and the debt became two issues that we were not able to talk about creatively. So I think those are the two biggest sticking points. When I talk about debt, is as that U32 district, we have $12 million that will include East Montpelier's bond, Middlesex bond, and the recent bond from Berlin.
And these are funds that communities have gone into debt to make enhancements or improvements or maintain the school buildings themselves?
Correct. Yeah. They were renovations and bringing the schools back to code. And and they were, you know, East Montpelier has been done for a couple of years now, but it's a process that started 6 years ago. Middlesex finished theirs last year, and Berlin just passed. It's just in the process of getting bids and, you know, actual construction documents. They just passed their bond.
Yeah, and so debt is going to be an issue in these mergers because different communities are, you know, have been making plans as their own districts, and now you're talking about combining districts. It's like getting married to somebody who has some debt, and that's certainly a conversation you have to have before the wedding, or you should have before the wedding.
Yes, exactly. And the thing is that, you know, how do you have that conversation creatively enough so that we can come up with solutions that work for our towns?
So
combining all the debt, it created a stall in the committee. So we're going to try to look at it in a more creative way.
We got a note from Scott Two in Calais who says one priority for the Calais School Board has been keeping up an adequate fund for maintaining and improving our school. As a result, we have no bond debt. Other schools in our 5-member Union 32 district have had different priorities, and as a result, three of the schools have over $15 million in bond debt. It would be unfair to lay that debt on Calais as required by the superintendent's preferred option. How can a plan that is so unfair to one town possibly succeed? So Scott there, Flor, talking about just the thing that you were mentioning, this idea of debt coming into play and some communities perhaps feeling like they're going to fund things that they or have to pay for things that they may feel they were more fiscally responsible in the past and now are getting punished.
Correct. So that's one of the things that we've been talking about it. And at that point, we could spend a lot of time just talking about different ways.
What about in terms of what you or what people in your communities want to preserve? What's the biggest priority in terms of preserving or enhancing that people are concerned about making sure to get right in a merger?
Yeah, I think our committee kind of represents all of those points of view to a certain extent. I feel all our communities in the five different towns feel really strongly that they want to have a strong pre-K to 12 curriculum, that they want to have the best outcomes and equity for the kids. When it becomes hard for all the communities is that you can really, and this is for the entire Act 46, you can't really touch any of our schools without touching the culture of the town, the local attitudes and, you know, opinions, beliefs, and values. And that is sort of, Act 46 is a little bigger, and it's a broader conversation with our towns. So our committee has been like struggling with that part too. So that governance part, the way you're used to do things and, you know, looking at it from a different perspective when it comes to union district.
That's Flor Diaz-Smith, chair of the Washington Central Supervisor Union Act 46 Committee. Flor, thank you very much for telling us where you stand. We'll look forward to hearing more as you come up with more.
Thank you, Jane.
Listeners, let us know what your community is doing or what questions you have about how Act 46 works. Again, call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Howard, just quickly, we are coming up on a new administration. Phil Scott obviously taking office in January. We don't know exactly what his plans are or who the Secretary of Education will be. Would it still remain Rebecca Holcomb, or would he appoint somebody new? But one of the things that Phil Scott did talk about during his campaign was preserving school choice. So how do you think that might fit into Act 46 and any changes that are made?
Yeah, that really remains to be seen. There are two big questions looming as Phil Scott gets ready to take over the governorship and lawmakers return. The governor-elect gets to name the new Secretary of Education, and it'll be interesting to see just how much of a litmus test this Act 46 issue is in who the new secretary is. And something else is that Phil Scott is going to name three new members to the State Board of Education. So he really has a possibility to change this conversation if he wants to. He has obviously talked a lot about property taxes in the state, so that's a big concern of his, though he also wants to preserve and even expand school choice. So we're going to have to see what happens. Another interesting topic coming up is that some lawmakers have talked about trying to get legislation passed this year that would maybe slow down Act 46. And some lawmakers say that this next July 1st deadline is putting too much pressure on these districts that are trying to come up with these, sometimes very complicated. And as we heard in Flora's story, there's a lot of issues. So we're going to have to see what Phil Scott does, and we're going to have to see what lawmakers do about possibly pushing out this deadline.
Yeah, and again, that deadline is one that has to do with incentives, right? So that if communities that pass merger plans by that July 1st, 2017 deadline do it, they will get some tax incentives.
That's right. That's right.
So one of the things that we were just talking about with Phil Scott and this idea of school choice, we talked with Dave Sharp before the program. He is a state representative from Bristol, and he's chair of the House Education Committee. So he's done a lot of work on Act 46. And on school choice, he says Act 46 is clear that neither the Secretary of Education nor the State Board of Education can actually reduce or eliminate school vouchers or school choice. The only way it can be done is by a vote of the community. And different communities are coming up with different ideas under these merger plans. Some of them are reducing school choice or tuitioning, and some aren't. Basically, the law allows communities to do what they want in terms of tuitioning, Howard?
Yeah, that's right. And also it's important to point out is that some districts are actually expanding school choice with Act 46, depending how they go. This kind of bubbled to the surface during the first phase as schools started bellying up to the bar, if you will, and trying to get involved. And maybe one school had choice, another school didn't. And it became clear that actually education law, not even Act 46, prevented one district from offering one school having choice and one not. So that's where the discussion came up. But there are ways around it. You have to be creative. And as these districts are putting their plans together, there are ways to keep school choice. But it's difficult, it's challenging, and it takes a little creativity. But Act 46, it is incorrect to say that Act 46 would put a clamp on school choice.
We actually got a note from Jean Collins, who's the Rutland Northeast Supervisory Union Superintendent, and she says, in Rutland Northeast, we were able to preserve school choice for the towns of Chittenden and Mendon by creating a side-by-side model under the law. Our communities are highly supportive of this side-by-side model, and we've been able to start to see efficiencies and equity of opportunity as we implement the new district this year. We knew choice was important to those two communities, and we were able to make it work. I don't feel Act 46 is an automatic death to school choice at all. I think communities can figure out the plan that works for them, as we did. We are talking about Act 46 today and hearing from communities who are working through what might work or what doesn't work for their towns and their schools. If you'd like to make a comment or tell us what's happening in your town, post a comment on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. David Kelly is chair of the Hazen Union School Board, and he joins us now to share his personal thoughts on Act 46. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So you don't like Act 46. What's your frustration with it?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm not speaking for the Hazen Union School Board. I'm only speaking for myself. But I think that there are three things that are important if you step back and look at the big picture. The goals of Act 46 are to increase efficiency, quality, accountability, transparency, and equity. But what Act 46 does to accomplish those goals is eliminate local school boards. There's no direct connection to eliminating hundreds of talented volunteers who are close to the community and expecting efficiency and quality to be somehow improved. What you get as a consequence of eliminating all those local school boards is a disconnect from your local community at a time when Act 77 and personalized learning plans are actually trying to get our schools more engaged, not less engaged or more disconnected. The disconnect from the communities is a big downside to Act 46. The second piece that I think is important is Act 46 says it doesn't intend to eliminate any small schools. But if you look at, for example, the Orleans Central Supervisory Union, where the big town is Barton, and the surrounding small towns of Albany, Irisburg, and so forth, they all have nice, good elementary schools. But when you have a consolidated school board with the big town controlling the board, and with that control having the power to adjust attendance boundaries, when they need to juice up their enrollment, it's easy to reach out and say, well, we're going to have to let this school become just a pre-K school. We're going to bring your elementary into the bigger school. That is something that could tear out the heart of a lot of small towns. I think, thirdly and most importantly, there is enormous room for improving efficiency and quality in our, but that efficiency and quality can be done through imaginative, innovative ideas. We can have multi-campus high schools. We can have partnerships with local resources. There's a lot that we can do.
David, on the idea of closing schools, again, what David Sharp told us from his position in the legislature is he thinks this idea that schools will close is a fear born of mispronunciation, as he puts it, of what's in the bill. He says this is district consolidation, not school consolidation. And when we consolidate the districts, he says, I think, and evidence shows, that small schools are better off in a large family, and it helps them remain viable. He points to the Smiley School in Bolton as a poster child for this. And he says we may have to close schools, but that's up to the local communities. There are four or five high schools in the south central part of the state with a combined total of 60 graduating seniors. They'd be more likely candidates to close than small elementary schools. So why do you think that this is basically designed to force the closure of small schools?
One of the most powerful things moving through Vermont right now is the decreasing enrollment in our schools. Schools operate on the basis of finances, and increased enrollment is increased finances. When you don't have enough students to sustain your school, you reach out to increase the enrollment. And I think one of the realities, and this unfortunately will, I think, harm the character and quality of life in Vermont for years to come if it unfolds the way I think logic says it will, is when a school board is controlled by a large town surrounded by small towns, and that town needs to increase its enrollment, and they see smaller schools in towns like Albany and Irisburg, it's easy to say, we're going to increase our enrollment. This school is too small. It's not efficient. And that school is going to become something other than a K through six school.
David Kelly is chair of the Hazen Union School Board. David, we're trying to get a ton in here, and I really appreciate you giving us your time as well today. Thanks very much for talking with us.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Coming up, we're going to hear from yet another community wrestling with how to address issues of educational quality and cost and adhere to Act 46 strictures. We got a note from Michael and Cabot, who talks about this idea of schools closing and says there's a substantial body of academic research that concludes closing a school can cause residential real estate values to plummet. For many homeowners in rural towns, that could totally erase their equity in their home. Whatever nominal savings might be realized in their local school budget may be far exceeded by the loss of value in their home. Without any real thought about these kinds of impacts, the legislature has adopted a law that will create two classes of rural towns in Vermont, a few that will have a school and the many that will not, the former that will prosper, the latter will wither. We've gotten a couple other emails about people concerned about school closures, and this is certainly something that people are thinking about and worrying about, although, you know, what you hear from the legislature and from the Agency of Education is that this is not a bill designed to close small schools. I guess, as Howard Weiss-Tisman, our guest for today, says, we're going to have to wait to see how some of this sugars out. More to come. Again, share your thoughts with us. Go to VPR.net and click on Vermont Edition, or call 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at how various communities around Vermont are grappling with Act 46 school consolidation rules, school district consolidation rules. Different supervisory unions are in very different stages, and we're hearing from a variety of them. We're also getting some clarity from Howard Weiss-Tisman, VPR's Southern Vermont reporter. Howard, what about this idea of schools closing? Is this basically a way to force schools to close without the Agency of Education having to propose or suggest that?
Yeah, I don't think so. It was interesting listening to that last caller. What I've seen, and I did a story early on in the process. I went down to Tynemouth, which is a very small school down in the south west part of the state, and they actually saw Act 46 as a way of saving the school. As we said early in this conversation, a lot of small schools, as they were seeing declining enrollment, were forced to cut. And what they did down in Tynemouth is that they wrote in their Act 46 plan parameters around which a school would or would not close. And that's what the Agency of Education and the State Board is trying to get across to some of these outliers. Again, is that if you're concerned about a small school closing, if you're concerned about being a small fish in a large pond, if you will, with other large fishes, that now is the time to speak up and now is the time to put a plan together to make concessions for your small school, because if 2018, 2019 comes around and you're one district surrounded by other merged districts, you're going to have a lot fewer options. So the State Board, the Agency of Education, is holding fast that this is not about closing small schools. People still talk about it all the time, so there's misconceptions. But I think that if you want to save small schools, if you want to keep small schools viable and healthy, it's important to take part in the process and put these plans together to give yourself a little bit of backing and strength moving forward.
Let's get one more example in here of what's happening in some Vermont communities. John Wilson is chair of the North Shire Act 46 Committee. The study committee involves Danby, Dorset, Manchester, Mount Tabor, Sunderland, and the communities in the Mountain Towns Regional Education District, which are Londonderry, Landgrove, Peru, and Weston. John, welcome to the show, and tell us what benefits you think merging might have for your towns.
Thanks, Jane, for having me on. So not just for our town, I'm from Manchester, but I think for the region, the committee, which, you know, we voted as a committee last week unanimously that this merger was advisable. And so one thing that we thought, a big thing, was that our proposed bylaws that we came up with would provide options and foster sustainable innovation for future boards. And that was a big piece for us, that it would be sustainable innovation. For example, you know, I'm from Manchester. I've lived here most of my life. For decades, we've talked about exploring the possibility of a regional middle school. Now, because of the current structure, that's been hard to do. You know, we have this really a siloed effect here with all these, you know, fragmentation of school governance with these separate smaller boards, and it's hard for them to communicate and explore these regional opportunities. With a merged district, this opens up the possibility that we can explore this, a regional middle school, for example, and see if that's a good idea or not. And so there's a number of things we, you know, that we looked at and say, hey, this will open up some doors for us to explore. Another one is that, you know, we believe that that kids will benefit, since merger would better secure programming from fluctuating enrollment and fiscal uncertainties. And I don't want to get into how, you know, the education funding mechanism works, but, you know, essentially that you have these fluctuations from year in, year out. It's almost like living paycheck to paycheck when you're in these smaller districts. And we thought with a little bit of, with some scale, that these schools could be protected, the programming could be protected. And so this is just a couple of simple benefits that we saw.
And John, we just have a couple seconds left, but, you know, in order to create a unified middle school, you'd have to give up school choice for 7th and 8th graders. And I understand that's been difficult for some people.
Yeah, so we don't, so in this merged district, that most of the districts do not have 7th and 8th grade school choice. We have 9th through 12 school choice. Sunderland, Danby, and Mount Tabor, if they're going to be a part of this merger, they need to give up their 7th and 8th grade school choice. And so that's something that they have to explore as, you know, in their communities, if that's the trade-off that they have to make. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. I think a lot of people are positive about the work we've done so far, but there are certainly some considerations that communities have to make.
Well, boy, it's going to be really interesting to see how this moves forward, and I appreciate you giving us just a taste of what's going on in the North Shire Act 46 committee discussions. John Wilson, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Howard Weiss-Tisman, VPR Southern Vermont reporter, thanks for guiding us through this hour, and thanks for all your reporting on Act 46. We have all of it up at vpr.net, and of course we will have more of Howard's reporting as he continues to look at how communities are dealing with this. Howard, thanks.
All right, you're welcome, Jane.
Now, for tomorrow, the incoming Trump administration has prompted more questions along the lines of how will this affect my life than most presidential transitions, and the LGBTQ people are among those who are concerned that the Trump administration could have a negative impact on rights that have only recently been codified. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.